May the words of my mouth, the meditation of all our hearts here present today, be now and always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. How many times have we said to ourselves or to someone else, we need a miracle? Many times. I know I have. However, what are we asking for when we cry out for a miracle? A miracle, a true miracle, is something that happens which is outside our current understanding of the natural world. It goes against all our scientific understanding, or at least what we understand now. A miracle is something that happens which we cannot predict, which we do not expect. So when we say we need a miracle, is that what we really mean? I don't know. Maybe not. Often what we mean is, I don't want to face what is happening, so please make it go away. And quite often, therefore, our cry for a miracle goes unanswered, or at least the miracle we have requested. Often with hindsight, which makes wise men and women of us all, we realise that what we were afraid to face wasn't actually as bad as we thought. It probably wasn't enjoyable, but hopefully we come through the experience having learned something about ourselves, and in so doing can step out stronger in the future. Many times, what we want God to do is to make things as we want them, to put things right as we see it. And yet the situation we may find ourselves in is probably caused by things not being right in the first place, things that we have chosen either to ignore or even not to be aware of for whatever reason. So now I've said what I think a miracle isn't, shall we look at what it is? As I said, a miracle is something which happens which is outside of our current understanding of the natural order of things. It doesn't conform to our present knowledge. In the past, the idea of miracles would have been quite acceptable to people, but as we have gained knowledge, so we have become more sceptical. Yet we know that things happen which cannot be explained logically. People recover from illness in spite of the doctor's prognosis. People survive natural disasters against all the odds. All manner of things can be said to be a miracle. However, what do miracles mean to the people who wrote the Bible? Do they demand a logical explanation? If there is one, well then, does that stop it being a miracle? To the people who wrote the Bible, there was no question about whether something happened or how it happened. What matters is the spiritual help we can draw from what happened. Take, for instance, the two miracles or signs we heard about today. Firstly, Jesus led 5,000 people with fed 5,000 people with a few loaves and fishes. Well, that doesn't matter. So what is the significance? I think it's that Jesus can feed us both physically and spiritually if we will just trust him. Nothing is beyond his powers, and he needs no other help. If we think we can survive by our own powers, then I think we're sorely misled. This is not an excuse to sit back and contemplate our navels. It demands of something in return. After the feast, the disciples gather up what is left. And we too must not be just satisfied to be fed. We too must help in gathering in the harvest, which is Christ's alone. And this harvest is not grain to make bread, neither is it fish for food. Our harvest needs to be those who are lost, yet are ready to be found and brought back to their true Creator. And surely today, there are many such poor souls in this world. The next miracle or sign follows on and surely adds weight to the first. Jesus has to get away from the crowds after the feeding so that they cannot seize him and proclaim him as their king. His disciples are alone and decide to sail to the other side of the lake. They're caught in a storm, and it is only when Jesus appears walking on the water that they can feel safe again. How does it happen? Again? Does it matter? I think not. All we need to understand is that we cannot survive alone. We need Jesus in our lives to be there through the storms and tempests we experience. He doesn't stop them happening, but he can clear the path and give us the strength to survive them and go on. How do we experience Jesus when he is obviously physically not here in the flesh? Well, speaking for myself personally, I find that I can only know Christ's presence through daily prayer. Prayer for me is like food and drink. I cannot survive without it. I cannot start my day without it. I pray for what I want, and God quite often answers with what I need. And that is not always the same thing. And I do find myself arguing over the path God puts ahead of me. And yet I know that what Paul wrote to the Ephesians is as true for us today as it was then. That out of his glory, we are granted inward strength and power through the Spirit. It is through the power of God's Spirit that we are empowered to achieve the impossible. I suppose you could say, that's a miracle. And before I finish, I'd just like us to look for a moment at the Old Testament reading. Because it seems to me David was looking for a miracle. Start off knowing that David is now king, and he is so secure that he doesn't even have to be present with his army. He can send his generals and his troops out to do what they have to do. He rules all that he surveys. His palace overlooks Jerusalem. He looks down onto the homes of those who live there. And one day, he catches sight of a woman bathing in her home. Being the king who can have anything he likes, he decides he wants her. He sends his servants to fetch her. We don't know if she is willing, but the king commands. She obeys. Now, she is a married woman, and her husband is away fighting in the army. And what happens next is not just a dalliance. It breaks one of the Ten Commandments, that not to commit adultery. But laws are for others, not kings. Sound familiar? People must obey the laws, but those who make them, well, they can twist them, they can break them, and with impunity, they think. However, this law is not a man-made law. It's God's law, given to Moses on Mount Sinai. Well, David has had his bit of fun with Bathsheba, and so far so good. But then she informs him that she is pregnant, and that changes everything. Now the wily king tries every means to hide the infidelity, sending for her husband and trying to get him to stay with his wife, and failing. So eventually, he has him killed. Now Bathsheba loses the baby, whether that's the shock of her husband's death, but all is covered up. But David must have had a lot of feelings for her, because he marries her. And she bears him a son who lives. And he becomes his heir, the great Solomon, who becomes an international king, who all the surrounding countries know. So I ask a question. Who was David trying to save when he did all this? Himself? I'm not so sure, maybe not. You see, under Jewish law, a woman who commits adultery is put to death by stoning. She has her husband's property. The man who she commits adultery with, he gets away scot-free. The woman always gets the blame. And even today, a woman in our society is called derogatory names if she has more than one partner. Not so a man. He's just a bit of a lad, having a bit of a good time. Nothing seems to change, does it? And women not only get the blame, they have to live with the result, which may be an unwanted pregnancy, a derogatory name. It is time we changed as a society and acknowledge that it takes two people to do these things and how important women are to us all. See, men dream dreams, but women, though having dreams, must deal with the practicalities of everyday life. I had a dream. I dreamed I would have my own business. My wife, Lynn, enabled that to happen. She took on and looked after our family while I went all around the world. I don't think she ever knew how grateful I was and how grateful I am for all that she did for me. She enabled my dream to come through, and in some ways, she put her dreams aside of her career to look after our family. So as you might realise, I have a deep regard for the female of our species, and less so for the male and for myself. The other thing is, earthly rulers, they take what they want, but our heavenly ruler, our king, gives what we need, even to the point of dying for us, that we might have salvation and life eternal. And he did this not because we deserve it, but because he loves us. No matter what. And he gives us the ability to share in that love and deliver that love to others. You see, I think he's a king worth serving, who I'm prepared to bend my knee to. Amen.